This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Whenever there is candy around, I always make sure I have enough. I know that my friend comes to town and always I have to share the stuff. Happy's, that's what he says to me. Happy's, hop for you, hop for me. Happy's, give me some. If I don't share, I am a bum.
Welcome, everyone, to the most prestigious event of the year in any medium, in any form. That's right, folks. It's award season at Place to Be Nation Pop. We are your hosts. I am Greg Phillips. With me is Nick Duke. We are the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and we are proud to present to you the 2018 Happy Awards. That's right. Nick, how are you feeling on this, once again, the most prestigious event of the year, and prestigious as well?
I'm on edge, Greg. The nerves are high. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. I mean, my anticipation is up. My pulse is quickening. My blood pressure through the roof. My cholesterol is through the roof, even though that has nothing to do with this being the Happies. I'm just so damn excited, and I don't know how to handle it. What's going to happen on this, the most unpredictable nights?
Who's going to win? It's a 15-week race to the top, right, Nick? Now, the other thing that's crazy about this, Nick, is this year, this award show just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We actually have, through the 1-800-COLLECT Road Report, stories of watch parties, happy award watch parties taking place all around the country.
Which is especially interesting considering this is a podcast and you can't actually watch it.
Exactly. It's amazing what's happening. I mean, I've heard about this taking place all over the country, Washington, D.C., Maine, Bismarck, North, South Dakota. I mean, all over the place, Nick.
Yeah. I haven't heard of that at all. And it sounds like something you just pulled out of your ass, but let's go with it.
There's been a lot of weasel sightings all over the place. And with those weasel sightings, what better time to introduce our panel here at the Happy Awards that will be unveiling the winners, that will be talking about the voting process. These are people who were in the voting room. Unlike other award shows, we don't just let the general public vote on these things. We have a very select committee of voters who put their knowledge of the past calendar year of comics to test, going back 1 year ago from the night of this recording. To really delve through the best of the best and the worst of the worst. And for this panel tonight, we have none other than our good friend, the host of the Sellers Points podcast, Mr. Russell Sell. Russell, welcome. I trust you have your tuxedo on.
I do. It is, looking pretty snazzy. I picked it up from the cleaners today. And much like Nick, I too am on the edge of toilet seat, waiting to unleash my dumpage of opinions and as meaningful as all that is onto the people.
Well, hopefully the listenership won't flush this podcast before finishing all the awards, but they probably will. Russell, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Over on to the host of the Sunday Groove, or as
Easy Like David Sunday.
Easy Like David Sunday podcast, David Sunday. How are you, good sir?
I'm good. Sorry, I forgot to unmute my mic, but I am wonderful.
You mean that you were in another part of the studio that we're all in right now together,
right?
Live.
Yes.
But I was doing something, so yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Most important thing of all.
You something. Sure were.
And also, it wouldn't be any kind of Place to Be Nation Pop panel if we didn't have our longtime, dear, close, personal, longtime friend, none other than the maker of the sausage, Tim Capel. Tim, how are you, sir?
Thank you, Greg. I have a half chub for the Happy Awards tonight. Mm. I hope that I did not open with that last year, but it was either that or an edging joke. So let's get the proceedings underway here.
Why not?
Absolutely.
Both?
this is a show that's going to be so in-depth that it will leave all of you, the listeners, with rosebuds.
Oh, God.
And with that, let's get started with our very first category.
Yes.
our very first category is, of course, it would have to be the best single issue of the last calendar year here at the Halfies. Now, as we're going to go throughout the show, this will be our format. We'll introduce the category. We'll go around the panel, and everyone will have their top choice or one of the candidates that they selected. Each person submitted their top three choices in a category, if they had that many. And they'll talk about one of their selections that were submitted in briefly, and then we'll unveil the ultimate winner. And so we're going to start on the best single issue with one of us. Nick, what was your selection for the best single issue of the half year / last half of last year?
You know, this one was a little bit challenging because I had to actually go back and remember which issue where. When you read so many books, it all kind of starts to run together after a little bit. But one of the stories that left a big impression on me this year was Brian Michael Bendis's Return of the Purple Man in the pages of Jeff Jones. A story that I was very much against the idea of, honestly. Because I thought the initial Purple Man story way back in Alias, you know, years ago at this point, was so perfect. I didn't want him to risk tainting that story in any way. But then came Jessica Jones number 14, which completely sold me on the entire storyline. Because this is a story or an issue that takes place almost entirely in a bunker where Jessica has retreated to with her young child Danielle, thinking that they are safe there. When all of a sudden, her toddler begins speaking to her in full sentences and a very familiar cadence. And it is then that she realizes that her child is under the control of Kilgrave. And they proceed to have a very, you know, in-depth, creepy discussion about the nature of Jessica and Kilgrave's relation, about what it is exactly that he wants from her, and the nature of her as a person. And it just, like, that issue in itself sold me on the entire Return of the Purple Man storyline, and it's still one of the most viscerally off-putting things I think I saw on a comic book this year. So I went Jessica Jones number 14 for my single issue of the year.
Very good. And quite opposite from Nick, my selections in these comic book categories, sometimes I won't have anything to add, and sometimes I'll have a very brief thing to say because I read as few comics as I have this last year. It's very easy to make selections. So for me, my choice for a single issue of the past calendar year was Doomsday Clock number 1. And this was an issue that made an impact, for sure, on me. I thought it was a bold choice, a bold comic book to come out with in the first place. A lot of people were against this comic being made. I thought it was about as good a debut issue as anyone could have asked for, set the stage really well for what was to come. And for me, I think it was, you know, the best spiritual successor that we have seen to Watchmen since Watchmen. So with that being said, I'll move right along to the next panel, and that would be Mr. David Sunday. Mr. Sunday, what would be your selection for the single issue comic of the year?
Sorry, we're just going with the first number one on it.
Just whatever you, I mean, yeah, sure.
No, I mean, y'all just said one name, so are we doing all three of them now? Or are we
just one.
Just one, yeah. Okay. My top one was Doomsday Clock number 2. And I actually was just rereading the series, and of the three that I've read, I have all four that are out, but of the three that I've read, two just stuck out the most with me, and was just hilarious due to some of Rorschach's interactions with people.
His first encounter with Batman in that one, right?
That one just stood out the most to me of what I've read this year, and that was my second time through it. It just really was a great issue.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Russell Sellers, your selection for the single issue of the half year, or at least one that you want to spotlight?
It was an issue that I pretty much passed on initially. I was not really turned on by the premise, even though I thought the art looked spectacular. And that's an issue called Death or Glory number 1. And this is one that, you know, it has the pedigree of writer Rick Remender and artist Bangle, who typically doesn't do interiors, or at least not in the last few years. He's usually a cover artist and a damn good one. But this was a comic that at first glance seemed a little too fast and furious for my taste. So I thought, this might not really appeal to me. But I took a chance on it because I was like, okay, I saw it in person and the art was just so good. So, all right, pick it up, give it a shot. Rick Remender's script is just blisteringly fast. And Bengal's art matches it note for note. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward story that is calling out things like Big Pharma, how it preys especially on people who don't make a lot of money or people who don't have like what we would consider normal jobs. But it also has this great heist movie feel to it, combined with some of my favorite elements from movies like The Italian Job or Bullet. So there's that gearhead chase element to it. This lead character, Glory Owens, is trying to find a way to help her dad, who's been living off the grid for like basically her entire life. So she kind of grew up like this, but she grew up a gearhead. She works on cars and she's really great at it. And now her dad is dying of cancer. So she's, you know, she's realized, hey, we don't have money. He doesn't even have a social security number. So like getting insurance is impossible. Helping him out in any way is just not going to happen. And she cooks up this plan to rob some pretty bad people that she, you know, found out about through the circles that she moves in. And as it turns out, some of these folks are a lot closer to her than we thought. So this is all building up into this big, very 70s style chase heist movie with a lot of great character moments, but one of the ones it introduces at the beginning uses a very unconventional weapon that reminded me very much of No Country for Old Men. So this book hit all the notes. It grabbed me from the jump, and I couldn't help myself. I added it straight to the pull list.
Excellent choice there. And one that I'm sure that Nick and I may approach one day through Longbook Hunters. That would be cool. I haven't gotten around to that yet, but definitely we'll have to add that to our watch list. And that brings us to Mr. Tim Capel. And Tim, I trust that you have a selection for our best single issue.
Oh, yeah. I've got to give it to Journey into Mystery, number 83.
Oh, a man after my own heart.
Debut of a fantastic character find in Thor, the new hero. I was a little bit, you know, underwhelmed at first by the whole hammer gimmick and, you know, transformation thing. Seemed like a blatant ripoff of Captain Marvel. Of course, you've got these untested creators. I don't know what else, you know, these guys, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, have done. I mean, who did they ever beat? But I mean, my God, right out of the gate, just action-packed, so much intrigue and soap opera as well. You know, I really dropped trowel for that. And and beyond just this new superhero, Thor, who I expect very things to come in the year ahead. But I do hope that his alter ego, Dr. Donald Blake, can overcome his lameness and pursue a relationship with his subordinate, Jane Foster, in spite of his lameness. You know, it's
and in spite of him being her boss.
It's a heavy burden to carry, but I'm really pulling for him, and I think he'll let off. So Journey into Mystery is definitely going to be one to watch. So I don't know how that missed you guys' list, but wow.
I have to admit it was just an oversight on the part. I can't speak for anyone else on the panel, but I just looked right past it. But, I mean, I think the question here is, do you think that title is going to work, though, going forward? It feels like with a new bombastic character, you might want to have that character's name in the title of your book, right?
Oh, I don't see why not. A journey into mystery. This is the 83rd issue. I believe, if nothing else, it's proven to be a time-tested commodity that is going to continue to sell. I don't see the need to make any changes here. It's
good point.
80-plus issues strong. Just don't mess with the formula.
That's an excellent point, Tim. And it's certainly going to be a book to watch in future Haffy Award installments as well. With that being said, Nick, let's get a drum roll going, because I believe you have the envelope with the winner of the best single issue as voted on by our massive panel of judges, a few of whom are not actually here tonight to be present for this. But I'm going to give you a little...
Yes, I have the envelope here from the accounting firm of Kahn, Brody, and Hansen, and they are handing me the envelope now, and here we go. The best single issue of the year goes to... Action Comics 1000.
What that was, but nonetheless, Action Comics 1000 is the winner. This, the celebration of the life and times of comic books Man of Steel, Superman. Now, if you want to hear a more in-depth discussion of this book, go check out the recent edition of Seller's Points podcast featuring... the Hard Traveling Fanboys, along with Joe Johnson, as we discuss Action Comics 1000. But any comments from the group here on this book? This was a title that is pretty recent. Just came out, a month ago or within the last month. Yeah. And it's one that clearly made an impact on a lot of the voters here.
I think so. I think that this is a deserving issue, as we talked about on the podcast that you very graciously plugged there, Greg. I appreciate that very much. This was the issue that I think we all said, if you have never been a Superman fan, or if you know somebody who's always been down on the character, hand them this book. They need it in their lives. And there was literally something for every type of Superman fan in those pages. I think it could easily be described as a love letter to the Man of Steel. So, yeah, I'm actually perfectly okay with that that be the winner of the best single issue of the year.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I voted for it as well as my number two book. And the way you put it, it has something for everyone. Mm-hmm. Anyone else on the panel that sent a vote the way of Action Comics 1000?
Well, it seems well-deserved. That's quite an accomplishment for Action Comics, I'm sure. One day soon, we will be celebrating the 1,000th issue of Journey into Mystery as well.
Absolutely. And not that I have anything to say about Action Comics, but if you want to hear more of Tim's thoughts on Journey into Mystery, check out a little show called Marvel Age, currently airing on the Place Free Nation Network.
Very good.
Hey.
Let's try to get some decor. Going back on the panel here.
Why? The Happies are known for, like, debauchery and hilarity to an utmost degree. We don't have Todd's birds and his guitar here with us this year, and that is a great
yet.
Loss, in my
Todd's
opinion.
Todd's birds. All right. Let's move on to our next category, which is Best Artist. Mm-hmm. This is the award for the artist who has been the best. And we're going to go to
the hell you say.
The person we're going to start with on our panel is none other than Mr. Russ Sellers. Mr. Sellers, who is your selection for the artiste of the past calendar year?
The artiste du jour, if you will, is a guy who I think is maybe the best superhero artist working today. A guy who just, I don't know how you'd really fully describe it. It's lifelike. It's just breathtakingly great every time he draws something. And that would be Mr. Gary Frank, who is the artist on Doomsday Clock, but has also been known for his Batman Earth One series with Geoff Johns. Among other Superman titles, such as Superman Brainiac. What else has this guy drawn in recent years? Just any number of Superman titles, it seems, with Geoff Johns. He's done a lot of those. But his work on Doomsday Clock is among some of the best I think I've ever seen him draw. The hyper-realistic detail of his faces, of backgrounds, action scenes, unlike anything I've ever seen him draw. And, I mean, he's been great at those quiet moments between characters, and that's usually what I think of whenever I think of Gary Frank art. But with Doomsday Clock, it feels like he's really stretching some new muscles. He is crafting some of the coolest action scenes that I've ever seen out of him. One in particular that jumps out at me was, I believe it's in Doomsday Clock number 2, when Marionette and Mime are in a flashback sequence robbing a bank. And they're taking out security guards. And just the way he draws Marionette flipping through the air and pulling off some just crazy acrobatic stunt work, it was like watching a movie. That's how it felt to me. So yeah. This guy is the best artist maybe of all of the current comic book artists today. So Gary Frank, easy pick for me.
Yeah, to piggyback off of that, he was also my selection. His work in Doomsday Clock has been phenomenal. He's been a lot of muscles, as you mentioned, and one of them being his Doomsday.
What's that?
His Doomsday. Oh, what's the word for it?
Rooster.
Rooster. Yes, and he's been doing a great job.
His Red Rooster.
Exactly. Much like Terry Taylor. He has made an impact on a generation of young readers. But I will also throw a little love out to my second favorite artist of the last year, which is Stefan Sergejic, the artist of Aquaman. He was great and awesome and fun and good. And it is good. And so with that,
hard hitting analysis here on the 2018 Haffy Awards.
That's what I'm here for. And so with
I know someone who might be able to help us pronounce that artist's name. I wonder who that could be.
Oh, Tim. Look at you, Tim.
Someone who may have helped us in similar endeavors in the past.
But he wouldn't. He can't.
Are you referring to David Bixenspan?
Well, let's not tell out of skewl.
Okay. Well, speaking of David's, let's go to David Sunday for...
That was a great segue.
His selection.
And the Haffy Award for segue of the year goes to Greg saying, well, moving on.
Yes.
In every episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Yes. Yes. I'd like to thank my parents for giving birth to me. And as opposed to anyone else. And so, David Sunday, what is your selection for the Artiste of the Year?
Mine's going to be the one, I think he was my number one last year, but I could be, I know he was on my list, but Andrea Sorrentino.
Yes.
That was a very hard one for me to pick because I was, as I just mentioned earlier, rereading some of the Doomsday Clock. And man, it was, well, it ended up being my number two, Gary Frank did. But I don't know. Gideon Falls is the book that Sorrentino is currently working on, and just his use of the labyrinthine kind of layouts on certain pages and just creepy psychological horror mystery kind of thing. I don't know. It just he illustrates it so well. So it's actually become really on my list of just books just based on the first two issues. And so I have to give out some love for him. He's always been on my radar because of Old Man Logan last year. Well, I guess it was Tears That Ran. And then what I've read of his Green Arrow was phenomenal, his artwork. So, Sorrentino is my favorite currently.
Excellent choice. Sorrentino is obviously a favorite of the Hard Traveling Fanboys as well. And if we can ever manage to get time and broaden our comic reading beyond Marvel and DC, I would love to get onto that book because I
why
love
the hell
that
would we want to do that
so
Greg?
Much.
Why the hell would we want to do that?
Oh, great point, Nick. Let's just stay in our comfort zone, I say.
In our comfort zone, or alternatively, in a high school gym in North Carolina.
That's right. We can sell that mother freaker out. This is an award show. I shan't be cursing until I do. But You know what? Let me just get out of the way. Doomsday cock. There it is. All right. So,
clutching my pearls.
Let's go to
among other things,
clutching your pearls and other things, and also being aghast at my touching unprocessed soil. Let's go to Tim and get his selection for the Artiste of the Year.
Okay. So, I think you all know I'm quite a fan of artists who are both good and also fast. Make it fast and good, and you've really got me, and I'm a fan for life. I'm thinking of guys like the Mark Bagleys of the world.
Right.
Maybe some Ron Lim in the 90s.
Otto Bender.
Sure, Otto Bender. John Romita Jr. also comes to mind. In that class, I think you'd be remiss in not mentioning Jack Kirby as well, the up-and-comer, the aforementioned
potential.
Oh, yes, so much potential there. The aforementioned Journey into Mystery 83. Of course, you have his continuing efforts on Fantastic Four. I'd like to see that become a monthly concern. Mm-hmm. And the Hulk as well, the Incredible Hulk, which wasn't a particular standout, but he did good work on it, I thought, even if the writing let it down a little bit. So that's another character to watch. But I see big things in Jack Kirby. You could be referring to him by various different adjectives if he keeps up the pace and the quality of work that he's been putting out this year.
Now, are you seeing him as like a future like solid, consistent mid-card level artist, or do you see him reaching the A-list alongside the likes of your Rob Liefelds and other people?
He is a B-plus player right now, but it remains to be seen what his future holds. Gosh, to mention Rob Liefeld and Jack Kirby in the same breath, a little bit unthinkable from our vantage point right now, but we'll see. I mean, it remains to be seen what the future will hold from us. So he's one to keep your eye on.
Another great outside-the-box selection by Tim Cable here. I like it. Nick, your selection for Artist of the Year.
Well, while I loved the artwork of Gary Frank and various other individuals this year, I think there was something about me discovering an artist I had literally never heard of before, seeing his work on Aquaman for the first time this year. So my choice was
Jack Kirby?
Skip John Stajic. And I went with him. Just remarkable. I mean, some of the most beautiful art, detailed, photorealistic at times, unbelievable, especially his covers, which were just blow away. I mean, for every cover for Aquaman he did there for a while. I have not yet read any of his Justice League Odyssey, and the reason why I haven't read it is because it's not out yet. But I'm looking forward to more from him here in the near future.
That would be an impediment to reading it, certainly.
Indeed.
But when has that stopped us before?
No, never.
Good choice, Nick. Obviously, Mr. That guy is a great artist, and we salute him for his hard work and efforts.
We salute you.
So, with that being said, let's go to the cards. I understand that they're walking towards us right now. Envelope, Nick.
Yes.
What do we have here?
The accounting firm of Kahn, Brody, and Hansen are handing over the envelope once again. And the winner is, in a landslide, Mr. Gary Frank.
Mm. Yay! That was somebody in the audience saying yay. And we
applause,
you too.
Applause, yay.
So Gary Frank,
he's also saying Raymond, and I wonder if anybody knows what kind of impression he's doing.
Raymond.
The winner, Gary Frank. Garen Frank, as some call him.
Garen Frank.
He's done a phenomenal job this past year. He's really put on a clinic, if you will, in drawing Rorschach and some of these classic Watchmen characters who were rendered so beautifully years ago by one, Dave Gibbons. And now we're seeing the layouts, the panels, all that stuff. So well-deserving award from Gary Frank. I do find it odd that Jack Kirby somehow finished in second, Nick.
Yeah, that was a little bit remarkable. He actually didn't even finish in second. He finished a third in the voting behind Step John
folk artist Surf John Stevens.
Yeah, Surf John Stevens.
Very good. All right. Well, let's go straight into this, because what better way to transition from best artist than to go right into best writer? Now, this, of course, is the award for the person whose penmanship has been the best over the past year, and in the world of comics anyway. So let's get cracking. I'll start us off this time around with my pick for the best writer of the last calendar year. And for my selection, I am, perhaps shockingly, given that there has been a Geoff Johns book on the shelf this past year, I am going to go with Christopher Priest.
Mm.
Who? Exactly. Christopher Priest. And he is my selection on the basis of kind of not just the quality, but the quantity of what he's put out. He's been able to hit his deadline, been able to put out a consistently great book. Now, granted, this is based on things that happened as of like November of last year. So I'm well behind. But what I had read to that point had been tremendous. A great book, Deathstroke, a really good job of presenting a true anti-hero in that, yes, he does some things that could be considered noble. He has a somewhat of a moral compass, but he also does a lot of shady shit. So for me, Chris Priest was an easy choice here, just over my favorite writer, which is Geoff Johns. But, you know, he only that I have read in this calendar period, I've only read the first two issues of Doomsday Clock. So
Doomsday what now?
Clock. And so I didn't feel comfortable putting him at that number one spot, but Chris Priest it is. So from there, I suggest that we would move on to David Sunday, and we should get Mr. Sunday's choice for his top writer of the last year. Mr. Sunday.
Meh. I'm going to go with Geoff Johns.
The aforementioned Geoff Johns.
Yeah, I had to pick him just because to bring in new stuff, Watchmen, and do it so well, it's just made me really fall in love with that book, which I was super excited about from the get-go. And when I saw or heard it was going to be him helming it, at the helm, that's actual way you would say it. I trusted it a lot more and had huge anticipation for it, so I'm glad it's delivered so far. Like I said earlier, I'm an issue behind, but love everything I've read so far, and I look forward to, I guess we'll see it over the next year since it's gone by monthly.
Let me ask you this about the Doomsday Clock, David. Would you say that the characters in the book have a goal of perhaps saving something? Just maybe, possibly.
I'm gonna save the world.
Yeah,
I couldn't think of the whole line.
If you'd like to hear that and even more, you can go and check it out in our archives at Place to Be Nation Comic Theater, Watchmen Part Two. It just dropped a few months ago or a month ago, whatever the hell. Go listen to it. It's awesome. We think, Nick and I, that it may be our crowning achievement. Is that fair to say?
I think that is fair to say. Other than, you know, a turd crowning through my asshole, it is probably my crowning achievement.
That did not go the way I expected it to, I have to say.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for Nick to surprise me on this podcast. That genuinely surprised me. So.
Well, you know, I had Klondike Bill on the mind, so what can I say?
Yes. You know, speaking of which, I have to have a random aside here on our awards podcast.
No.
As many of you may not know, I was on assignment this past week. If you listen to our show this past week, you would hear that. But I was on assignment in the depths of Florida. And as I was driving down there, hanging and banging on Venice Beach, Florida, baby, I saw a sign for something that made me smile. And that sign said, "Glass Bottom Brides, $5."
Only $5. Is that Canadian? Wow, that's right. Is that Canadian or American?
You know, it didn't say. And I didn't get a chance to look into it.
I would assume it would be Canadian, being that he was indeed Klondike Bill.
Well, that's true. But the Klondike was in Alaska, right?
Yeah, but nobody cares about that. Cold weather automatically means Canada.
Good point. We know because we do our show every week from Hoholoon Plaza, which is, of course, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So, which we are right now for this awards show.
Yep.
So,
we have the L-shaped red carpet rolled out.
Let's move on to in the writers category, and let's get over to Tim Capel. Your selection for the best writer of the calendar year.
I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about. The only person who even wrote anything was Stan Lee. I don't know who these other people are. I don't know. I don't know what a. I mean, what a Jeff Johns. Who is that? Again, who did he have? What are you talking about? Doomsday Cock? I mean, I don't know what kind of underground bullshit comics y'all are reading, but if you want to be part of the plan and you want to be part of the conversation, then you need to be reading Stan Lee comics. I mean, they're not hard to find. My God. It's just, I don't get it. Why are we even... How is this even an argument? I mean, just this is really,
and it is really remarkable, Tim. Because I mean, 8 titles a month, 8 specifically, 8. Why specifically 8? That answer in the first episode of the Marvel Age podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean that is very true, and point is well taken. But it's 8 titles, but it's month after month, so mm-hmm. it kind of builds on itself, and you got a lot of momentum behind that. I mean, I know people harp on him for being too goofy. I would agree with a particular assessment, that if anything, he is too dramatic.
Wow.
compare his work to anything else going today. You know,
Joe Simons of the world.
Please, yeah, precisely. Can't hold a candle to the man.
And you know that's an interesting take, Tim. I would be interested to hear somebody expound on that a little bit at some point.
I would too.
Now, Tim, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that you're going to make us love Stan Lee, even though we don't.
You're going to say you love him, even though you don't.
And like that,
you're going to say you love him, even though you don't. You
careful now. Nick's not going to like us much if we keep doing yonks.
Greg, are you sure you saw that sign, or was it actually a silhouette that was cast by the shadow of the pythons as you were rolling down the road in Sarasota?
Yo, me and Rod the Bod, dude, we're riding down Sarasota County Beach, bro. Nick, any thoughts, any comments?
About what?
Writer of the year, your thoughts.
Oh, writer of the year. Yes, I have thoughts about the writer of the year. My thought that my writer of the year was Tom King. Tom King. Yes, he wrote this little book. I know Stan wrote a lot of books this year, no doubt, Tim. But there was this other little title called by the name of Batman that Tom King was writing. And in my opinion, as much as I enjoyed the title over its first year under Tom King, this past year is where it's really, taken off, and it has fully stepped out of the shadow of Scott Snyder's Batman run and become a damn fine and iconic Batman run unto itself. Once the book became refocused on the Bruce and Selina relationship, and that has been the driving theme of the book over the last calendar year, it has really become my most anticipated book pretty much every time it's on the shelves. It goes straight to the top of my pull list pretty much every time, and there have been very few issues over the last year where I've walked away disappointed. So for his work on Batman, Tom King gets the nod from me.
Yo, let's move over to Russell Sellers.
How do I follow that? Oh, that's right. Best writer for me, easy pick, Ed Brubaker. Yeah, there's Tim. Look, Tim, I'll give Stan Lee all the credit in the world for his very dramatic takes on things. Certainly some bold ideas there. Very ahead of his time. Certainly.
I'm even doing on this show.
You know, it's you got to suffer through it just like we have to suffer through all sorts of other things. But but in any case, Ed Brubaker writing a little title called Kill or Be Killed, which has been at the top of my pull list for quite a little while now. I hate to see that that book is coming to an end at issue 20, but you know what? Don't overstay. You're welcome. Tell your story. Complete it in, on your own terms and, you know, move on to something else. But easily has been my my favorite 2018. So Ed Brubaker with his partner Sean Phillips, just killing it every single issue. There's not a bad one in the bunch. In fact, I would say that it's kind of raising the bar for my expectations of Image titles, of any non-superhero title in general. I'm kind of judging them all based on the baseline of Killer Be Killed now as to whether I stick with them. So, yeah, that's the mark of a great bit of writing. So Ed Brubaker, best guy writing in the business today for my money.
Hey, for more opinions exactly like that one, you can listen to last week's Hard Traveling Fanboys, where we count our top five favorite active comic book writers not named Geoff Johns. And you may find someone on that show whose opinion matches Russell's.
Son of a bitch.
Very good stuff, Sellers. very good stuff there. And with that being said, it looks like we are ready for our final announcement here of who wins the category. Nick, is the firm approaching?
The firm is approaching. The envelope is in hand. We're opening up here. Oh, I thought this might happen. His work on Doomsday Cock. The award goes to Peter David, of all people. Peter David. Doomsday Clock by Peter David takes home the award. Wait a minute. No, that's a... That's the wrong envelope, apparently. No, it's Geoff Johns. Johns takes home the award.
That was the – I'm sorry, folks. That was the envelope of the award for who gets to sponsor the upcoming comic book draft at Place to Be Nation.
The third biennial. Yes.
Yes. We apologize for that. But Geoffrey Johns wins it. So good work, Mr. Johns. We love you. Go back and listen to literally any of our podcasts, and you can hear that. So we'll move on.
We will be hearing from the law firm of Landau, Luckman, and Lake, I have no doubt.
Yeah. Let's move on to best story of the calendar year. I will kick us off because I literally only voted for one, the one that I've read the most of in its totality. Doomsday Clock, or Doomsday Cock, if you will, is my selection for story of the year. Already been over why. Nick, your selection for story of the year.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, with my selection for single issue of the year, I wound up being a really big fan of that Return of the Purple Man storyline. It was Brian Michael Bendis's last great gift to give us as a Jessica Jones writer, and he knocked it completely out of the park in every conceivable way with a follow-up story that, while it not doesn't necessarily exceed the highs that the first story hit, it stands alongside and complements that story in so many wonderful and fantastic ways and draws great parallels, you know, between the character that Jessica Jones was then and the character that she has become over the last almost 15 years of character development. So for that, Return of the Purple Man is my selection for the best story of the year.
Well done, sir. David Sunday, let's go to your vantage point here and get your pick for story of the year.
Well, mine is the exact same as yours, Doomsday Clock. Has easily been my one of my favorite books this past year, and just based on the story alone, going to have to give it to it.
Excellent. Mr. Sellers, Russ Sellers, your selection for story of the year.
Mine is going to be a bit different, maybe one that was a little unexpected, but it's The Death of the Mighty Thor from the pages of The Mighty Thor from Jason Aaron and largely by artist Russell Dauterman. I have loved everything that Jason Aaron has done on Thor since Thor God of Thunder, but he did something truly amazing here. He took a character in Jane Foster, a character that I didn't care one way or the other about, and actually made me not only give a damn, but actually really come to like her in this role. She has been written tremendously as the current Thor, or as up till recently the current Thor. And every issue just showed why she is a compelling character. Here she is dying of cancer, going through chemo treatments, but she has become Thor. And every time she uses the hammer, it erases all of the chemotherapy from her body. So she's right back to square one. It's like nothing she's doing is helping. She refuses magical treatment because she wants to beat this disease on her own terms, if she's going to beat it at all. But the dilemma becomes that she is slowly killing herself every time she becomes Thor. And it turned into this wonderful, huge scope story that has all been leading up to the War of the Realms, which still hasn't fully kicked off, but that's certainly coming up. It's something that's been teased for a while now. But this last story arc where she is making so many sacrifices to try and save people who have no real love for her at all. In fact, the people that have tried to kill her over the course of a couple of story arcs, and here she is standing between them and something that seems virtually unstoppable in the Mangog. It was drawn beautifully. It was written in one of the most heartbreaking ways. Absolutely loved the last two issues of it, more so than I even thought that I could. So this is one that really hit home for me. So yeah, Death of the Mighty Thor, best story arc of 2018.
And with that, we bring ourselves to the final award here, as the law firm of Kahn, Brody, and Hansen approaches. Nick, do you have the winner?
I do have the winner, and here it is. Oh, man, what a tight race this was. Barely edging out.
Wait, before we get there, I just realized I forgot to solicit Mr. Capel's pick for story.
And what a great transition from me saying barely edging out and moving to Capel. I love it.
Yes.
Okay. Very nice callback there. I like the continuity. My pick for story of the year, I feel like it's going to get shut out. I just have a feeling based on the temperature of the room here, but it's clearly the finest installment of the great anthology title by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko from Amazing Fantasy number 15. I have to give it to the Bell Ringer. If you haven't read it, be sure to track it down. Available on Marvel Unlimited. Be doing yourself a disservice sitting this one out. And you've just gotta get on board with this. Great art, great writing, so dramatic. Enough said. Let's see who our winner ultimately is.
All right, Nick, you have the winning vote receiver here.
Yes, I do. Very tight race here, but in the end, by the slimmest of margins, the victory goes to The Death of the Mighty Thor from Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman in the pages of The Mighty Thor.
How'd they kill him already?
You didn't even know that he was a woman.
Wow.
I mean, it stands to reason, long hair and everything.
Bosom.
Scratching my head a little bit here, but all right, so be it.
So there you have it, The Death of the Mighty Thor, story of the year. Congratulations, Jason Aaron, Russell Dodderman, and Marvel Comics. Now, let's move on to a category I have absolutely nothing to say about, best ongoing comic. I abstain from this category because I don't have enough active comics to make it a wizened choice here, so I abstain. Let's move on to Russell Sellers, and get your pick, sir, for the best ongoing of the last calendar year.
As I mentioned during my pick for the best writer in Ed Brubaker, I said that Kill or Be Killed is the top of the pull list every single month. So it is taking home the top prize in my book. It is the best ongoing on the shelf.
Excellent. Good choice, sir. Let's move over to Nicholas Brandenburg Duke and get your selection.
Once again, I have to go to Brian Michael Bendis and his contributions on Jessica Jones, which hit incredible highs over the last year and over his final story with the character. Just a phenomenal effort from him and something that will always hold a special place in my heart this last year of Jessica Jones. So I went Jessica Jones as my best ongoing of the year.
Very, very good. And let us go to David Sunday and get your selection for the ongoing comic of the year.
This was the probably the easiest category. It was the first thing I answered when I was filling out my ballot. It's got to be Kill or Be Killed. That I mirror what Russell said with that book. It is actually, I literally get home from the comic shop and I read that immediately. And that never happens. Like, I typically put them aside. I'm excited to get them. I look at the covers and I'm like, oh, that's great. But Kill or Be Killed, I can't wait to read every time. And very sad it's about to end, but we'll definitely be following Ed Brubaker on whatever he does next because he's made a lifelong fan of me, or gotten a lifelong fan. Yeah, whatever. And so, yeah, Kill or Be Killed. It's an amazing book. Explores some really cool themes and really kind of has you second-guessing what the hell's going on quite often. And I don't know, it's a can't-miss book.
Very good. Two votes now for Kill or Killed. Now let's go to Tim. And I have a suspicion. I know where you might be leaning on this, but I'm interested to hear your pick here.
Well, I'm leaning pretty hard on what will probably be the unconventional choice. Folks, maybe a little bit unsure what to make of this new series, but Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
it's rewriting what it means to be a superhero team comic, if you will. And in the year 2018, is it a horror series? Does it belong more in an anthology title? No, it is I will grant you bi-monthly series. I think it needs to be monthly, because I have found that this book is improving by leaps and bounds exponentially issue to issue. Got off to a rocky start, admittedly. But I think they've really hit their stride. The meta element of one of their villains wanting to promote them in a feature-length film that goes quite wildly off the rails. What a comic romp that was. So enjoyable. And I'm expecting so much more. And that was in issue 9, by the way. So I think... If you're not reading this, or if you're a little bit on the fence, not sure what direction, what form Fantastic Four might take, please check it out. Another in the great, resume here of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. What a phenomenal series this is developing into.
Yes, and it's certainly a far cry to your point from what we've seen in recent years from things like the All-Star Squadron or the Howling Commandos, previous groups of ragtag groups of heroes banding together. This is certainly a far cry from that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, the closest comparison you could draw is to something like Justice League. But I mean, even though they are both superhero teams...
You made your selection yet in this category?
Yes, I said Jessica Jones.
That's right. All right, so we're ready. Looks like a firm approaches.
Mm-hmm. They do. I have the envelope in hand. I am opening it up, and wow. Stunner here. The award is going to go to Kill or Be Killed.
But yes, excellent. The story wins, Kill or Be Killed, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, I believe, right? Is the artist on that? And they take home the the proverbial cake here at the Happy Awards. Awards, that is. That's the word I was going for. Now, as we do every year, folks, we have to look at the worst of the worst as well as the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And so let's switch gears a little bit. Let's turn to comics that indeed grinded our gears. And let's start out with our pick for the worst comic of the last calendar year. Now, again, this is a category I abstained from because I don't really remember reading a bad comic in the last year because I haven't read many. And I've done a pretty good job of culling my list out to only comics that I enjoy. But let's go to my cohort, Mr. Duke, and get your selection for the worst comic of the calendar year.
I also did not submit one. The only book I considered would have been a strictly as a troll vote, but then Todd wound up not being on the podcast, so I cast no vote. I cast no vote for DC Metal, and I just let it go.
All right. Okay. Well, let's move on and let's go to Tim. I'm interested to hear Tim's selection.
For the record, it sucked.
Oh. All right. Well, let's cut on over to Tim Capel and get your pick for the worst comic.
It wasn't the worst thing in the world, but I would say what left me slightly underwhelmed was Tales to Astonish number 35. called the Return of the Ant-Man. Now, we haven't actually met Ant-Man before this. We did meet his alter ego, Hank Pym, in a previous installment of this series, but now he's being kind of reconceived, I guess, as a hero that, you know, that genre seems to be coming back into style, I suppose. And I don't know, the whole shrinking gimmick didn't quite jive for me. It just seemed a little like, so what? Who cares? He shrinks. Big deal. And, you know, they're leaning hard on this communist scare, red menace thing. I know that's certainly very topical today, but it feels a little bit trite. So this one, it could have been better. It just felt like it needed another pass, you know, like maybe it's the first draft of something.
Now, now I got to ask you about this. Are you a fan of the hyphen, or do you want no hyphen? Two words, or do you want no hyphen, one word?
I prefer the hyphen because without the hyphen, I'm, you know, I get
David, your pick.
Oh my! If memory recalls, I didn't pick one because if I read a bad comic this past year, I dropped it immediately and forgot about it, so I didn't do a worse comic.
Very good. You're in good company with the old HTF here. Russell, your selection for worst comic.
Also a category I abstained from. Not that I read some comics that were questionable, just didn't feel like fully throwing anybody under the bus because, honestly, they weren't that bad.
Right. Okay, so the winner by default, Tales to Astonish, number 35.
Yep.
Well, actually, we have one ballot from outside panel. That is going to throw the category.
Run in.
Throw the category. The manager, Todd Weber, gets to single-handedly select the worst comic of the year. And that worst comic is JLA Doom Patrol number 1, which I did not read and don't even know what it's about. But it wins the award for worst comic of the year.
I am assuming, and this is me going out on a limb, I'm assuming that it is a team-up between the JLA, the Justice League of America, mm-hmm. and the Metal Men.
Mm. Or the Doom Patrol.
I don't know. That would be crazy. How are you going to have the Doom Patrol cross over with the Justice League? Tim, you're a concept. Well, you
know, the Doom Patrol, talk about concepts that are our first draft. You know, they could do much better than that. And I think we may be seeing an improvement upon that concept here soon. But Justice League, no surprise. I didn't read it either, granted, but just illustrates what I'm saying about how, you know, it's passe. Passe.
I can't argue with any of that. I mean, again, we've seen it before with the All-Star Squadron, the Justice Society of America. And now they're just retreading that old ground and not giving us what we're getting in the Fantastic Four every month.
We are in the Marvel Age of comics. This is
And you, the listeners, in the Marvel Age of podcasts, if you go to Place to Be Nation Pop right now. Now, but listen to us first. Listen to this show first, and then do that. Don't cut us off. Anyway, that was a hell of a category right there. With one vote.
Indeed, indeed it was.
So let's move on to a category that I am certain will receive votes.
Yes, yes it will.
Let's go to the worst comic book movie of the last calendar year. And let us get started with Mr. Sunday. David Sunday, what is your selection for the worst comic book film of the last calendar year?
It really saddens me to say this, but I mean, we all know the reality of what Justice League turned out to be. So obviously that's got to be my pick, because that's actually the only one that I didn't enjoy this year. I mean, I enjoyed not very much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be Justice League. Everything else this year hit.
I'm going to go ahead and throw my vote out there, because that was my pick as well. I agree. It's a movie that admittedly I enjoyed more than most did, but still was not a good movie on any level, and was a colossal disappointment when compared with the output that Marvel put out in the 2 months. And also just placed, you know, alongside the movies that are more interesting for what happened behind the scenes than in front of the camera. So let's move on to Russell. Russell, your selection for the worst comic book film.
Well, it's going to probably be pretty much what everybody else said. It's going to be Justice League. And rather than give you a long diatribe about why, I'm just going to give you this.
Well, that's a lengthy flushing process.
You know, Russell considers it a toilet flush, and I have to say, Greg, I have to say, for my money, it was just a dumpster fire. I mean, it was awful.
A dumpster fire, you say?
It's a dumpster fire. Fuck Justice League.
It's too bad that you can't express that in GIF form.
If only I could.
In image form.
I'm trying to channel some nerd rage right now, but somehow I just can't for Justice League. Fuck it.
You just...
Yeah, it doesn't really deserve rage. It just deserves to be forgotten. And that is exactly what it will be in just a few years, other than what you guys talked about. The behind-the-scenes drama could maybe make for a far more interesting movie than what we got.
I see James Franco and Seth Rogen tackling this in a few years.
I'm with it.
But I think we are not unanimous in this selection.
No, because I wanted to say the most interesting and the best, perhaps, for last. Because, Mr. Tim Capel, I'm going to let you give your pick for the worst comic book film of the last calendar year. Yeah, that's it. That's what it's called.
Well, this is fucked up. I feel like I'm now a Vince Russo character playing... playing both my shoot version of myself and my work version of myself on the same program. a 2-in-1 here. And I kind of want to – and the thing is, like, my actual answer would feel like a gimmick answer, but it's not.
No,
really.
No, it's not.
But,
and people can get your in-depth thoughts on that. How?
By listening to a Place to Be Nation special review of the film that is my actual answer, but that I don't want to actually name because I kind of like the continuing theme of Justice League getting just L after L here in these categories. But, I mean, when you measure it in terms of what I would actually prefer to watch again, I would rather watch Justice League again over Infinity War. Ooh. I hate to say that. It pains me to say that because Justice League was trash. I mean, let's face it, it really was trash. And in any other year, that would be the winner, the loser, whatever you want to call it, by a landslide.
Loser.
Yeah. Thank you. But because Infinity War was such a disappointment to me, the shoot version of myself, Tim Capel, I have to say that was my worst comic book superhero film. And again, you can get my in-depth thoughts on that on our pod blast that became a full-on podcast, 3-some-odd review of the movie earlier this year, I guess shortly after the debut of that film in late April. But I don't know. What else can I really say? It just – these things – one of the things that I picked up on in – reviews of this film by other folks who really enjoyed it was you find yourself getting lost in the moment, right? So you're not thinking 5 to 10 movies ahead. You're just looking at what's on screen in front of you right now and getting sucked into that and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. And you're not concerned with, well, they're going to do another movie that just reverses all this, blah, 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 right? And I just, it never got to that point where I got lost in the moment of what I was watching at the time. I think I kind of described in my review how it, far from pulling me in moment to moment, it was actually losing me as the film progressed. And so that was the real problem, I think, that I had. And at the end of the day, yes, we know that things are going to be undone by the conclusion of the next installment, and that the heroes are going to die. I mean, that's no great surprise. Of course, that's how these things go. But the main ingredient here is how much you are willing to spend your disbelief. And it just never got to that for me. I couldn't get past my disbelief that anything that was happening here really mattered, and that this was even a movie in its own right, you know? And that's a big problem when everything is just preamble. Everything is just rising action. Everything is shit happening because it just needs to happen, not because any of it really matters or has any sort of resonance for me. And I know that it did for other people, but maybe I'm just too cynical. Maybe I'm too jaded. Maybe I couldn't set aside my way too critical faculties. I don't know. But I was just expecting a lot more from this than what I got. And it just felt like such a chore. And perhaps I will revisit it someday and feel differently, but it's almost still too fresh. And my opinion has sort of settled, and I can't say I, in my mind, like it or hold it to any higher esteem than I did, you know, than the first go-around. So that's still where I'm at on Infinity War.
Well, do you have a – does the work version of Tim have a selection? I don't know that you would even have an option there.
Oh, Justice League, easily.
Or actually, Tim, I'm surprised you didn't go with the Fantastic Four film that was produced by SM Studios.
I don't know what you're talking about. Never happened.
Bro, it never happened.
It never happened.
Well, with that being said, Nick, do we even need the firm to approach us?
Well, I'll be damned, it's Justice League.
S&M Studios.
Very good. Let's move on to the next category here. Worst television show. Mm. Now, this is a very curious category because I genuinely enjoy the comic book shows that I do watch. And the ones that I don't enjoy, I have largely cut out of my life, such as Gotham or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am aware that it apparently has gotten good in recent seasons. I don't care. I'm not going to reinvest in it at this point.
The only people who say that are people whose opinions I don't trust. So there you are.
So with that being said, I did have a selection, though, Nick, and it was a tough one to make because it's a show that I genuinely love at times, but it's a show that has burned me one too many times. And as much as it pains me, I had to go with AMC's The Walking Dead for my selection of worst television show.
As did I, and, because fuck it.
Yeah, yes, and for more of our in-depth thoughts on that, listen to whatever episode it was that we talked about, the season finale of The Walking Dead.
I will quote the manager, Todd Weber, in a text that he sent to me after hearing our episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys and say, in all caps, how the fuck did they kill Carl Grimes and the show actually got worse?
Good point. Good point, Nick. Good point. Maybe this was your penance for all your years of rooting for Carl's demise.
Well, if that's the case, then at least the show gave me one last gift before I kicked it out the fucking door and told it to hit the bricks.
Russell, your selection for worst television show.
I got a real feeling this is going to be almost a clean sweep because fuck this show. Walking Dead and I are done. Todd said it best, but beyond that, you had an opportunity to not repeat the same mistake that the comic made when you had the chance to kill off a character who needed killing, and you didn't. Mm-hmm. You followed mm-hmm. the wrong path, mm-hmm. and then you create an unnecessary split in your group, and when mm-hmm. you look at who's on those teams, mm-hmm. it makes no fucking sense.
Exactly.
You spend 2.5 seasons with one character telling us how killing is wrong. There's another way. And while I don't necessarily disagree with the sentiment, then you're going to put him on the team of people who want to do what? Kill someone and kill members potentially of the other team.
I think what we're saying to the audience here, Russell, and I think something they'll appreciate hearing on these airwaves is fuck Jesus.
Yep. fuck him and his stupid long hair.
Yeah.
Get a haircut, you fucking hippie. Get off my TV. I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. I'm done with this whole exercise in futility. Walking Dead,
but
you have fully jumped the shark. I didn't think it was possible to get worse than Glenn under a dumpster. You proved me wrong, and I am now fucking done.
But, Russell, what about the plan?
Rick and his plan can go jump in that dumpster and set it on fire.
Excellent. 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 Tim, your selection for worst comic book show.
I think that I have a tendency to bail on things sooner than the rest of you guys. And I would say, for my money, The Walking Dead has been the worst comic book television adaptation for about the past 3 to 4 years. Well, I take that back. Excepting last year when it had Iron Fist as competition. But this show is just garbage, shit, crap. This is, you know what? Isn't it telling that their best episodes occur when they deviate from the comic?
Yes.
This is kind of
the comic fucking sucks. Sorry.
Okay, well, took the words out of my mouth. This is your follow. This is your folly in sticking, you know, so faithfully to a comic that is not very good, and in a lot of cases, flat out sucks. So this is kind of the bed they made. They're going to lie in it and roll around in feces because, I mean, my jumping off point for The Walking Dead, my own personal series finale was the death of Carl. Great way to go out on that show. And as far as I'm concerned, nothing else happened after that. So, yeah, a firm fuck you to The Walking Dead.
And I'll say, I've said a lot of things about Robert Kirkman over the years. I called him a lot of names. Iron Butt, Boner. Sometimes I called him Asshole.
No.
That's right.
That is a bit far, Greg.
Oh.
I know, and I apologize for that. It's too far. Some things just aren't meant for me. Now, let's move to David and get your selection for the worst comic book television show.
Well, I'm going to cheat because I jumping on the Gotham sucks a wagon, I nominated that. But I had a brain fart because I, too, would put Walking Dead on there. I guess I was just so angry the week it happened and just purged it from my memory. The Walking Dead finale, that was just awful. I can't say I'm done completely for it with the show, but I know I'll no longer be paying for it as I had in the past with getting season passes to watch it, like the day after it airs. It's ridiculous what they did this year, how boring it was getting there. Like that, the ending was awful, but it was just so boring.
The last stretch of episodes, last maybe 5 episodes, with the exception of maybe one that was good, they were so god-awfully boring. Just a horribly boring stretch of episodes.
But no, they weren't boring. How could they be boring, Greg? They were all-out war.
Yes, that's a new version of all-out war where everybody sits around and does nothing.
Yes.
They were about as interesting as Marge shot during a dramatic reading of Mein Kampf,
baby.
I don't know whether that was Baker Dennis Miller or Sex.
Woo! Can it be both?
Could be it both. Can now.
Oh, God. Nick, the winner of the category is Walking Dead, right?
The Walking Dead. It takes home the award for worst comic book television show of the year.
And it can mail the hard-traveling fanboys to pick up its no prize, which it should be used to picking up those by now.
You know, we got one more surprise cat, dudes.
What? We do. We have a surprise category that's not – this is not on the format sheet. You guys didn't even know about this.
Uh-oh.
That's because over the last year, we have seen an explosion in Place to Be Nation and the offerings across the network. And we thought it would be appropriate to send a little love our way to our favorite new Place to Be Nation podcast. And the halfie goes to – Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith with Talkin' Pop.
What? Yes, that is correct. The votes are in. You can't argue with the votes. I mean, the votes are in. Talkin' Pop is hottest and freshest of the new podcasts at Place to Be Nation, according to the kids on the street. Mm-hmm. And so here to accept the award is Tim Capel, one half of Talkin' Pop. Mm-hmm. We'll call him Pop. Tim, How does it feel to win this award?
How does it feel to have a halfie in your hands?
Well, I can't say it's the first time I've had it. Okay, that's inappropriate. That is inappropriate. I feel like Jenny should be accepting this award because I think of Talking Pop as Jenny's show, and I'm just kind of along for the ride. It was very much her idea. She asked me if I wanted to do a podcast with her. I said, sure, sounds like fun, without having any idea what she really had in mind, but it's been so much fun. I love doing that show. We have a handful of episodes under our belt. Let's face it. It's not like we have some tremendous pedigree here yet, but maybe we will in the future, and we're going to keep doing it and keep having fun. What an incredible accolade or allocate if you're Lex Luger. You know, we are the Village Bicycle personified, and I am always and forever riding bitch on the Village Bicycle. So, as I've said before, I love Place to Be Nation. I love Nation Pop, and I love Talking Pop, and I love Jennifer Smith and all the voters who put us over.
Doll moment.
A doll.
Right, brother. And I love being a turtle. And with that being said, we're going to take a commercial break here at the Halfie Awards. We're going to give you a chance to refuel, refresh. And when we come back, we're going to be uncut. We're going to be uncooked. And we're going to be uncensored.
We're uncensored!
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way.
The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
One day I had an apple so big it must have been big as a balloon. I wanted to eat it, well, but then my good friend, he came too soon. Happy's, that's what he said to me. Happy's, half for you, half for me. Happy's, give me some. If I don't share, I am a bum.
Welcome back to the most star-studded event of the year, the Haffy Awards for 2018 here at Place to Be Nation Pop, or Pup, or Pup, or Pop, whatever you would like to say. And I'm here again with our all-star panel.
Hey,
and,
Greg, mm-hmm. You know what my favorite, mm-hmm. You know what my favorite Dr. Seuss book is?
What is it?
Hop on.
That is a good one.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to delve into the world of television here. Ooh, television. And we're going to look at some of the good stuff in the world of comic book television shows this past calendar year. And our first category is an interesting one. Best performance in a TV show. This is going to the actor or actress who has impressed us the most with his or her performances on a comic book television show. And to get us started in this category, we are going to go to the host of the Sunday Groove, Mr. David Sundy.
Easy like David Sundy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Sorry, I didn't do that at the beginning. I had to bring my ridiculous Sunday Groove voice to it. So best
performance. It kind of sounds like Little Sweet. You know, the character that Justin Guarini portrays in the Dr. Pepper commercials nowadays. That's sort of what that reminds me of.
Sweet!
Yes! Going to falsetto and you really got it. Anyway.
I'm going to do that soon. I need to dive into that character.
You really should. Explore that character more.
But my favorite performance this past year was Jon Bernthal in The Punisher. Like, I loved this actor for a while. Like, I enjoyed him on Walking Dead, even though he was an unlikable character, he did a great job doing it. And I've enjoyed him in a lot of things. And Daredevil season 2, when he appeared, he started to blow me away. But The Punisher, I don't know, he channeled the sadness, the PTSD he had, and just other things so well. But then he was just a complete badass. So I have to give a lot to that actor and that character, and so I can't think of a better way to say it than just Jon Bernthal.
Very good. Excellent selection. Russell Sellers, your pick in the actor or performance category.
I'm going to go with Brandon Routh as Ray Palmer on Legends of Tomorrow. He's always been good on the show, but this season
his game elevated to heights I didn't know he was even really capable of. I'm going to talk a little bit more in depth about that a little bit later, but he makes me feel things that I didn't expect to in this type of show, because it's a whole... At least someone knew what I was doing. But in any case, his performance is just top-notch stuff. He's funny. He can really get across a great level of sadness. He can break your heart and make you laugh all within like the span of just 5 or 6 minutes. And his chemistry with Neil McDonough's Damien Dark is just some of the best stuff on TV right now. If you didn't see the season, it's on Netflix right now. Go watch it and get ready for Brandon Routh to steal the show.
Oh, he's great. I love that pick, Russell. He and the thing that made it great was he managed to balance that humor with the tender moments and do it with a lot of subtlety. It wasn't. It never came off as forced or ham-handed the way that he had to deliver some of these tragic or character-defining moments. He did it with a word that we use sometimes when describing, ironically enough, Superman, an earnestness.
Earnestness, about, but I would also say nuance. There are so many times on Legends of Tomorrow where things go really over the top, and I think the finale really illustrates that. But in a fun way, of course. But the point being, he found a way to add that subtlety into the performance and into a show that is oftentimes anything but. So Brandon Routh, killer performance all season long, and a guy who has more than earned my respect and admiration as an actor.
Absolutely. Tim, your selection for best points in a comic book television show.
I gave it up to Carrie Ann Moss for the second season of Jessica Jones on Netflix. I think it could be subtitled "Don't Fuck with Jerry Hogarth." Without getting into spoiler territory, it's a little bit difficult to talk about her arc in the second season of Jessica Jones. But let's just say she has kind of a B plot that, you know, these things can be somewhat hit or miss, a little bit disconnected from the larger narrative taking place within season two of Jessica Jones. But, I mean, her performance and for the story that she's given really knocks it out of the park. Again, trying to avoid spoilers, but when you think she has reached her lowest ebb, she makes a mammoth comeback. And throughout the entire season, I mean, she's killing it performance-wise. Just somehow became the most compelling character in a show that was already pretty packed full of compelling characters and good performances. So we're going to be hearing a little bit more about Jessica Jones season two as the show goes on. But real standout in Carrie Ann Moss, what she accomplished in that second season.
Loved that performance, Tim.
Okay, I wondered if anyone's really watched it.
Yeah, I finished the season, and you're right. It breaks her down to like the smallest part, and then she reminds you that Hogarth is a cold bitch.
Did she sell the leg?
She sold the cunt too.
Nothing on the square here, I believe that's called, right? Ribbing on the square, my bad.
Ribbing,
I
want to
get my carny terms proper here.
Ribbing, fisting, whatever.
Edging.
let's move. Number two. Nick, your selection for performance.
You know, I'm going to say something that hurts me deep down to say. It's very painful for me. It's not something I'm proud to admit on these airwaves, and it's going to take a while to get over it. But I'm going to have to agree with David Sunday on this one. And
woo!
Yep. I'm going to say John Bernthal as his portrayal of Frank Castle in The Punisher. I was a few months after the fact. Did not watch it when it launched in November, and I came to it later, not really knowing what to expect from the show. I had enjoyed the Daredevil Season 2 aspects that handled The Punisher well enough, but I don't know that I necessarily enjoyed them because of Bernthal. I just thought that the writers were doing a really good job of putting that character in an interesting as it relates to his conflict with Matt Murdock. And so when I turned on the Punisher and started watching and found that it was ultimately, while it has its bloody badass action moments, it's kind of a character study. That's not really what I was expecting at all from it. And over the course of 13 episodes, you really like get to dig around inside the psyche of Frank Castle in a way that few Punisher comic books I've ever read have accomplished. And a lot of that is due to Bernthal in both his ability to not only, you know, deliver his dialogue in believable fashions, but also to emote and use nonverbal communication and facial expressions and body language to get across character. And I was just really blown away from episode 1 through episode 13. So when I came down, you know, sat down to make my top 3 here for this category, it was Bernthal was hands down number 1, and nobody was going to even come close to him. So Bernthal, yeah, for me.
In a show that I liked but didn't love, I would say his performance definitely carried it over some of the humps, mm-hmm, along the way. Like, he was a real tour de force in that. And again, something that I guess it shouldn't surprise us that much based on what he has done to date. He was kind of like the best character in The Walking Dead the most compelling character in The Walking Dead back when that was a show worth watching. So it's like a logical choice or continuation in his career to take on something like The Punisher. And I thought he really nailed it. So that was kind of a close second for me, I would have to say. You guys are right.
Hashtag Shane was right. my selection
To bone his best friend's wife?
I stand by what I said.
And then attempt to rape her in the shower?
Hey, what happens in the shower?
No, Wait, let's get this on the record. Greg, are you saying that
the actual fuck?
Are you saying that you're condoning attempted rape? Is that what we're hearing right now?
No. I'm saying
is that
Shane was right in his direction for the group of survivors in The Walking Dead. Not saying every action he took was right.
Uh-huh.
But Shane was right. My selection for the performance of the year goes to one Kirk Acevedo as Ricardo Diaz on Arrow. Kirk Acevedo is one of those character actors that you see pop up in things from time to time. And as Nick had just off the air when he first popped up on Arrow, he's one of those that guys. You see him and you're like, hey, it's that guy. I've seen him before. But this is the first time I've seen him in anything where he really just popped off the screen, because he took what was, I would think it's fair to say, what was turning into a pretty middling season of Arrow at one point earlier this year, in fact, around the mid-season point. And once they switched focuses and focused in really heavily on him as the big bad of the season, the show really took off and soared through the end of the season, to the back half, really. And it was largely on the strength of his acting. His performances were outstanding week to week. I think the episode The Dragon, that was almost entirely focused on him and his journey to becoming what he is, it was one of the best episodes of the season. Probably one of the best, you know, you probably put it on a list of the 20 or 30 best episodes of the entire series, which covers a lot of ground. He was outstanding from beginning to end on the show, but especially the stretch of like 4 or 5 episodes, he was just dynamic, including having one of my all-time favorite lines on a comic book TV show, "You've got something stuck in your throat," which was just an incredible badass line. So Kirk Acevedo gets my vote. And with that said, Nicholas, I believe we have two gentlemen approaching us. 3, in fact.
3, the prestigious accounting firm, of course, of Kahn, Brody, and Hansen. And, whoa, this is different, Greg. They have not one envelopes, but 2, because we have a tie. We have a tie, ladies and gentlemen, for the best comic book television performance of the year. And that is a tie between Kirk Acevedo as Richard Dragon and John Bernthal as Frank Castle.
Wow.
Are sharing the award this year.
Wow. Interesting. This is our first tie of the year, actually, Nick.
It is. Our first and only tie, I believe, is what I was told.
Not that we know the winners yet.
This was told by the crowning firm.
Here to accept the award on behalf of both Kirk Acevedo and John Bernthal is legendary WWE Hall of Fame announcer Jim Ross.
Mm.
Quite frankly, everybody knows the only person that should have won this award, no disrespect to Kirk Acevedo. He seems like a hell of a guy, hell of a hand. No disrespect to John Bernthal. Pretty solid performer himself. Carrie Ann Moss, hell of a woman. Could have signed her in the Attitude Era, and we would have made a lot of money on the back of her. But who should have won this was the star of several episodes of Mid-South Wrestling, which can be watched on the WWE Network for 9 months, Dr. Death Steve Williams. Now, let me tell you about Steve Williams. Steve Williams was a man. If the tough man contest known as the Brawl for All had been a shoot, had been legitimate, and I'm not talking about these stupid rules that they put in place, he would have won it easy. And he would have been a top star. He would have been the big opponent for Stone Cold. Some things don't work out, folks. Well, that being said, maybe you disagree with everything I just said. And if you did, fuck you. God, harsh words from Mr. Ross.
Man,
oh, that was
good. And you have to
nonetheless, congratulations to the Acevedo and Bernthal families.
And you have to wonder, why is Mr. Ross here in the building this evening? Perhaps he is here for some other purpose to be revealed later in the night. I don't know. Interesting.
He might be double booked.
He might be.
He could be. We don't know. But let's move on to the next category, shall we, Nick?
Sure. Why not?
And it is the best television episode mm-hmm. of the season. And I think we should start with us on this one, Nick. And okay. I will go first and reveal that my pick for the best comic book TV episode is actually the most recent one that I've watched.
Greg going with recency bias once again.
With the Arrow season finale, Life Sentence. And this was, as I mentioned, the wrap-up of the Ricardo Diaz story, the wrap-up of a season-long arc of Arrow, and a season that, while it dipped in the middle, turned out to be really strong by the end of it. And this was just the culmination of everything that made the back half of this season so much fun. We start off with a killer action scene right out of the gate. We end up having probably our best fight scene right out of the gate, and then we go to more character development, more examination of the seemingly deteriorating psyche of Ricardo Diaz, as he is clearly being pushed to his limit right now by the actions of the Green Arrow and his team. We get emotional farewell to a major character that really worked on me in a big way, thanks to performances from the actors in the scene. We get a great one-on-one fight between Oliver Queen and Ricardo Diaz, and then this season on a really great cliffhanger to set up what should be a pretty compelling season 7 of Arrow. So that is my selection for episode of the year. On to you, Nick. Your pick.
Yes, as opposed to Greg, I'm not going to fall into the trap of recency bias, and I'm going to go back, dial it back a few months. I just praised, during our discussion concerning the best performance in a comic television show, heaped praise upon John Bernthal's portrayal of the Punisher. And one of the great things about the Punisher, anyway, and I know some may disagree, is that unlike most of the recent Netflix offerings, I felt like this was a 13-episode series that did not leave you wishing it was over by the time the 13th episode rolled around. I thought it was well-paced from beginning to end, and by the time that season finale came along, you were ready to see how all this played out. You were legitimately concerned for these characters who you had come to develop an attachment to over the course of 13 episodes, and you wanted to know if Frank was going to end up getting that sense of closure that he had been looking for, if David Lieberman was going to find a happy ending of his own. And just how the conflict between Frank and an unnamed character that I'll withhold naming in the interest of spoilers for Greg's benefit anyway, how they were going to resolve their issues. And I thought from the season finale delivered on pretty much every aspect of that. I was left wholly emotionally satisfied by what happened in that episode. It served as both an effective wrap-up to this season and a look forward to where things could go in the future. All in all, I didn't see anything from the CW or anywhere else this year that topped that that finale of The Punisher, which was entitled Memento Mori. So I with Memento Mori as my television episode of the year.
I would remind people that for all of Nick's talk of me having recency bias, he also voted for the most recent episode he had watched last year at the Halfies. Just throwing that out there, Nick.
A nice case of whataboutism from Greg Phillips.
What about Bob, Nick?
Great movie.
I'm sailing. I'm sailing.
Indeed you are, Russell, and that brings me to you, selection for a television episode of the year.
My selection will also not be hindered by recency bias, because I am going with Phone Home from Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, great choice. Yes. Definitely my favorite Legends episode.
This was, of course, when the Legends traveled back to the year 1988 in an effort to keep Ray Palmer from being erased from history after he begins to fade away back to the future style on board the Wave Rider. And they find that young Ray Palmer in 1988 has come across a time-displaced baby Dominator. And some dodgy CGI aside...
Is that like a baby genius?
I'm going to say that yes. We will go with it as a baby genius. And this show, of course, this episode is going to be packed with lots and lots of nostalgia button pressing. All the wonderful 80s references from movies and TV shows. But just the feel of the episode also felt like the folks who run Legends of Tomorrow got a look at Stranger Things and said, I think we can do that. And they made an episode of the show that felt very much like it would have been at home on Stranger Things. And I mean that in the best possible way. And this is also the time when Brandon Routh really starts to shine in this season because and this is before he really shows off his chemistry with Neil McDonough. There's no real Damien Dark in this episode, well, at least not much as I recall it. And he just brings this nuanced, deeply emotional performance that really gets deep on the character of Ray Palmer. You start to understand why he views the world the way he does. He's getting to see his childhood through adult eyes, and he realizes how unreliable a witness that memory can be. Because while he remembers things being a certain way, seeing the truth presented to him kind of shatters a lot of illusions that he had about his own childhood, and it could easily have brought him down to a certain level of despair, and I guess just cynicism could have taken hold in him very easily in this episode. And there's even a moment whenever you start to wonder, is he about to tell his younger self, you know, not to believe in all these things that made him who he is. But thanks to Zari, actually, and a pretty stellar performance from her, he allows his younger self to hold on to that hope and that optimism that made him who he is. And call out to Jack Fisher, who's the young kid that plays young Ray Palmer.
Yep.
Shockingly good. Did not expect him to be worth anything at all, but totally bought him as a young Brandon Routh and as a young Ray Palmer, more importantly. So this was easily my episode of the year. If you don't watch any other episode of Legends of Tomorrow, go on Netflix, look up Phone Home. It's in season. Watch this episode, and if you don't love it, then we probably don't share tastes in much.
Very good, very good. And let us move over to Tim Capel for your selection for episode of the year.
Okay, so I've seen from this category, but I'm going to answer the call here. And speaking of 80s references and recency bias, I think I would have to do episode 9 of Cobra Kai. which is a series that inspired me.
Hell?
Which inspired me to subscribe and then, in very short order, unsubscribe from YouTube Red. Pretty good, pretty entertaining, pretty fun continuation of a franchise from the 80s. So if you're so inclined and a Karate Kid fan, do check that out. But no, to give somewhat a real answer here, I would say whichever episode it was of Fox's The Gifted that had the whole Fenris backstory, okay, and the reveal at the end that the Strucker siblings had inherited the powers of Fenris, if you will, and they had this very destructive potential when they combined their abilities. The Gifted, a show as a whole that I'm not sure if I like it because it's actually good or if it's just so chock full of Easter eggs and, you know, little continuity X-Men trivia nuggets that really get me going. I know that it could be both. It really could be both. And I kind of made my peace with it by saying I don't care ultimately at the end of the day. I just like it because I like it. I mean, in a show that, you know, they have the X-Men animated series theme as a ringtone, right?
And that feels that's awesome.
It's awesome, but it's the kind of thing that feels a little bit too obvious and like makes me roll my eyes a little bit. But at the same time, when you do stuff like have a character called Rory Campbell and you're building up to the Days of Future Past timeline and you have characters like Sage and Beautiful Dreamer and fucking Pulse. It's like when you're getting into the orders of 1990s Excalibur comics, you really know your shit. And that's kind of what I go for. And I do think it is an actually good show, but that kind of stuff puts it really over the top for me. And it all sort of came to a head, I think, in that episode that detailed the backstory of the Strucker family and, you know, the Von Strucker twins who were otherwise known as Fenris, which is an incredibly deep cut. So good on you, The Gifted.
I'm glad you brought that show up because I completely blanked on it as I was putting my TV show stuff together. But I'm glad you followed my advice and checked it out. Because it is one of my absolute favorites right now, this season two, and I am so ready for season two.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Sunday, your selection for episode.
I had to go with Deathstroke Returns on Arrow.
Yes.
And that had a lot to do with the nostalgia and just the love I had for Manu Bennett as Deathstroke. And seeing him and Ollie back together and Oi, kid, even though it sounds nothing like him, you know, that's my version of him. It was just so great to see them back together, see them interacting. And if I recall correctly, that's the one that just has some of the most badass fight scenes towards the end. Like, just it's close, but it's done so well. Like some of the season, not to down it, did some of the close combat, you know, falling a little too close. But that one, it was done so well. And, yeah, so I was.
Was that the episode that has him going through the like warehouse, like just clearing out dudes with incredibly violent kills?
If that's the one I voted for, I mean, like, yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. Hopefully, that's the right name for it, because another would have been in it this season. I believe it was that one. And yes, those clearing out that warehouse was insane. And yes, seeing Ollie go back to a more violent way was, you know, enjoyable.
For sure. All right, Nick, let's get that envelope up here and roll that beautiful bean footage.
Yes, I have the envelope in hand. Here we are opening it up. Russell, Russell, Russell. And it is, wow, a little bit of a surprise here. The winner is actually an episode that wasn't mentioned by anyone. The winner is The Resurrection, the first episode of Black Lightning on the CW this year.
Very good. A show that we haven't mentioned yet, but a show that we probably should, in that Black Lightning got off to about as good a start as you can for a series. It came out of the gates with what I think, quite honestly, I'd have to rewatch the Flash pilot, but off the top of my head, may have been the best pilot episode of any of the CW shows. Certainly right there with the Flash.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that wholeheartedly. I did not vote for this episode, but I certainly understand the two individuals that did, and those two votes were enough to hand it the title this year.
The championship title. All right, well, let's move right on to the next category, which is Best TV Show. And let's start this round where we ended the last with David Sunday and get your selection for the best show of the year.
Well, hello there again, listeners. It's good to have you listening to me.
And I'm going to go with Punisher. Talked about a lot of the praises I had for the show with John Bernthal, but just it's tackling some very tough issues, such as, you know, similar to PSA. I guess that's basically what he had. And just real life issues with other people and human moments and his subtle facial reactions to things from John Bernthal. It just gave me what I wanted. And it's funny because, like, I was excited for that show, but I never would have thought it would have been my year. But looking back on this year, thinking through all the shows, that's the one that grabbed me the most and the one I had to watch the quickest. Like, I could not put that show down. And I'd have done a Netflix show, like, within a week watching the whole thing if it was more than 8 episodes. Like, it usually takes me a couple weeks or a month to get through one. But that one, I just marathoned it within maybe, like, 5 days, maybe. So anybody that knows my attention span, that's saying a lot.
Sure. Nick, your selection.
While I almost also went with The Punisher, I ultimately could not do so because I thought this year the CW had its finest entire season of television outside of perhaps Arrow Season 2 with Legends of Tomorrow's Season 3. I thought there was never a down or dull moment for this show. It hit pretty much everything out of the park. Even the episodes that you would consider perhaps to be the weakest of the bunch are still really damn good episodes and entertaining as hell. And then they closed it on one of the most ridiculous high notes that you can imagine, doing an episode that only Legends of Tomorrow could get away with doing. And so for that nearly flawless level of execution, I had to go Legends of Tomorrow here.
Bebo hungry. And in this case, Greggy hungry too. And Greggy agree with you on your selection. Because I also went with DC's Legends of Tomorrow as my celebrity show of the year on the basis of kind of what you alluded to, just the consistency on a level that, again, maybe Arrow Season 2 is the only other season that can match this for pure consistency. Every single episode knocked it out of the park. And, you know, really from the opening gates, we talked last year on this very show, in fact, about how Legends of Tomorrow had really found its footing in Season 2, settled into what kind of a show it was and how it can do episodes and do things that other shows can't do. And it leans more into the zany comic book world than really any comic book show that we've probably ever seen. And I think they took this year to even higher levels, whether it was aforementioned Bebo, whether it was Blackbeard the pirate being a, you know, basically a cowardly lion figure, whether it was going across the time stream and visiting areas and places that we may have never suspected, including a world of clones of this new character of Ava. Almost every episode I can think of, even the Elvis episode, which I expected to hate due to my Elvis fandom, I ended up loving because it's got a certain amount of charm that Legends adds to any topic that it approaches. Just a tremendous show all season long, great ensemble performance, which is really a hallmark of the CW in general. But Legends, really, every person in the cast stepped up and delivered when they need to deliver, and nobody felt like dead weight on the show. Neil McDonough turned in his best performance yet as Damian Dark. just a great, great show, and it became the one that I looked the most forward to watching every week. So Legends is my pick. Russell, let me go to you for your selection.
Well, I don't know that I can verbally fellate any better than that, so I'm just going to leave it at Bebo Horny and Legends of Tomorrow.
Very good. Very good. Mr. Capel, your selection, sir.
I am going to give it up to Jessica Jones Season 2. And I watched this over the course of about 3 days. I know that folks didn't seem to have quite the level of esteem for this as they did for the first season, which is understandable. And yet, I do feel like the second season was a pretty logical extension of where they left things at the conclusion of the first season. Trying to avoid spoilers again, because I do recommend that everybody does watch this if they enjoyed the first season of Jessica Jones, but I said I was a fan of some of those deep cut continuity nuggets, and they introduce a character from the comics in a very smart way that I really applauded in this season. They also explore some rather uncharted territory in some of the intrigue around Jessica's origin that we did not do in the first season. I also just felt that each character was really well realized, and it's a smartly written show. Like, I don't think that the show gets enough credit for how well written it is, especially in terms of the dialogue. It's almost sneaky in that regard. There are certain contrivances, yes, that you get with any superhero televised drama, but I thought that they worked really well for what they did in this season. And there wasn't anything that I didn't connect with. I know that there are people who criticize specific plot points and decisions, and I kind of just think those people are dumb babies and don't know what they're talking about. Because this season was really cool, really entertaining, and really, I think, accomplished a lot. And I hope they continue the adventures of this character. I don't know that a third season has been greenlit as of this point, but I really hope we see some more Jessica Jones, just in an ensemble like Defenders or whatever, but in her own right, because she deserves it. This show deserves it. Really good stuff.
Maybe she can take a new Immortal Arnfist.
You know, if we could just get more Jessica Jones and less to none of Iron Fist, that would be quite all right with me.
Nicholas, I understand you have the winner once more.
I do. And the winner is Legends of Tomorrow.
Very good. And, oh my God, here to accept on behalf of Legends of Tomorrow and its entire cast and crew is a man whose words represent their thoughts, and that's none other than, my God, Comic Book Theater's own Sex Ferguson. Dear God, Sex, what brings you here to the Happy Awards to accept this on behalf of the Legends of Tomorrow crew?
You gotta give me a goddamn minute to collect my thoughts. I was about to get the blowjob, and you kind of pulled me out in mid-thought here. I wasn't really prepared for such a thing. Let me zip up my pants. It'll take a few minutes packing this big baby back inside. Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow. I don't even know these fuckers. I fucked the one bitch that wears the white, or the white, as I should say, and then she took the white all over her face, neck, and fucking chest. And with that, Sex is out, buddy!
We here at the Haffy Awards and Place the Nation Pop would like to apologize profusely to the following people. Every person listening to this podcast right now, the families of all the crew members, cast, and creators of DC Legends of Tomorrow, and the entirety of the United States of America and parts of Canada.
I will say that that was more titillating than a sex dream or a sex adjacent dream about
But, never mind. I'm going to fail on that bit.
Piddly.
We don't need to.
I stepped out for a bathroom break. What did I miss, Greg? I missed something.
Or oh, tails out skewl.
Nothing.
Nick,
nothing.
Nick, we actually may be getting booted off the air.
Why?
As a result of what Mr. Sex Ferguson appeared while you were gone, and it didn't go well, sir.
I hate that fucker.
What a bastard. Well, let's move on to our next category, and let's move to the silver screen. That's right, the silver screen, the screen that is silver. And let's get into our best performance in a comic book movie. And we're going to start with none other than Tim Cable. And Tim, I would like to hear your selection for the best performance in a comic book movie.
Okay, I thought we might be getting some Katharine Hepburn. For a second.
Nah. I mean, no.
All right. Well, I cast my vote for Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther for his portrayal of Eric Killmonger, a role that was very well written. It's one of those things that you don't have a lot of villain performances you can hang your hat on in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but Eric Killmonger was certainly one of those and brought to life by Michael B. Jordan. And, you know, not just portraying a sympathetic character, which I think we're all pretty accustomed to, but doing it with such style, man. How cool was that guy?
Awesome. He was an incredible character, an incredible performance. Let's move to Mr. Sunday. David Sunday, your selection for comic book movie performance.
It was really hard for me not to pick Michael B. Jordan. He was actually my number two. But
mine as well.
I know you're just asking for number one, and I have to go with Robert Downey Jr. from Infinity War.
Excellent.
He brought the trademark humor and wittiness to his performance. He also brought a lot of emotional weight and his reactions to a lot of events that I will not talk about. But he just, I don't know, just gave one of the most memorable performances as Iron Man that I've seen. And so that put him as my top performance of the year.
Yeah, I recently watched that movie for the third time, and he definitely stood out for his performance in that film.
I had a lot more thoughts. I just didn't want to.
And we appreciate that. We here at the Happies are not in the business of spoiling things that are more recent than, like, the 1960s. Actually, that's not true. But still, we'll move on to Mr. Sellers and get your selection for performance of the year.
Chris Hemsworth in Infinity War.
Yes.
Because Thor is finally fully realized. He is every bit as, you know, hilarious as he's always been in these movies. He brought that charm and wit over from Ragnarok, but you also see several moments where the weight of everything that's happened is fully on his shoulders and it's crushing him. But he's using humor as a defense mechanism to try and get around that, though there are several points where he can't. Like it's coming through, it's bleeding through whether he wants it to or not. But it's not just that. Without getting too heavy into spoilers, Thor wreck shop. And that is why Chris Hemsworth is my favorite part of Infinity War and my favorite performance in a comic book movie this year.
Love the selections of both Downey Jr. and Hemsworth. And what I will say with regards to Hemsworth is this was also the first time he's gotten a chance in a group setting to come off as the guy. You know, Captain America has had movies where he's the guy in the group setting. Iron Man has had movies where he's the guy in the group setting. This was Thor's chance to prove his place among that triumvirate, and he delivered. I will go next, and my selection for performance of the year, I actually went with someone who, maybe from a strict acting performance, may not get this nod, but because of how she embodied this character, I think deserves it, and that is Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. She put on a strong performance, which, yes, is the name of the category. But I selected her because I don't think that there has been a more iconic, instantly iconic portrayal. Chris Evans as Captain America comes to mind. If somebody, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, Christopher Reeve as Superman, where the minute they step on the screen, all your doubts go out the window, if that makes sense. And you see them and you believe them and you're like, my God, that's Wonder Woman. All right, I'm with it. She is Wonder Woman. She is Diana. And it's hard to really describe what quality she has that puts that across. She has a charisma. She has a believability, a command of that character. Then you see her, you just believe. You believe, you know, the old tagline for the Superman movie, you will believe a man can fly. In this case, I will believe a woman can fly. I will believe that a woman can lift a tank above her head. I will believe she can stand for truth and justice and all these things and stand right alongside these iconic male performances that we've seen in superhero movies, whether it's Chris Evans, whether it's Robert Downey Jr., Hemsworth, Christopher Reeve, whoever it may be that you're looking at in these most iconic portrayals of superheroes, she deserves alongside them. So for that reason, I selected her as my performance of the year. Now, Nick, your selection for performance of the year.
Said it so eloquently, Chris Hemsworth in Infinity War, and I will just add, because that performance fixed a lot of the things that were wrong with Ragnarok in a troll comment, and we will move on.
All right, fair enough. Now let's move on to the winner of the category. And Nick, the people are approaching here, and in particular, Hanson is approaching, and he's heading in the wrong direction. What the hell?
Well, he can't see a whole lot these days. I'll help out. He and Herschel the Wonder Dog have some things in common in that regard. But in any event, I have the envelope, and I'm opening it here, and it goes to – the halfie goes to Michael B. Jordan as Eric Killmonger.
Eero Killmonger.
Holy shit, I got one.
You got one. Michael B. Jordan was the only – nominee to appear on every single ballot. No, wait a minute. He did not appear on David's ballot. Other than that, he was on the ballot. Yes, he did.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
he's on every ballot. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Wait a minute. There's not a miscount.
He's on all the ballots. He wins.
All the ballots. Michael B. Jordan. And very, very deserving. Excellent, excellent choice there by all of us, in fact. So, let us move on to the best comic book film of the year. And for this one, we're going to get started with none other than the illustrious Nick Duke.
Mm. Yeah, so this was a tough one. I mean, it's been a damn good year in comic book film.
Truly.
It was especially tough to narrow it down to just three. And I even had to make a last-minute change to my three that I nominated. But really, For me, there was one film that stood head and shoulders above the rest when it came to registering with me on an emotional level, leaving me with that giddy feeling when I walked out of the theater, and that is last July's Spider-Man Homecoming. Loved virtually everything about it. I can't really think of too many things I would change, if anything, about it, other than perhaps their version of, quote, MJ, end quote. But from the scaled down focus of it to the Robert Downey Jr. Tom Holland relationship to the hot as hell Marissa Tomei version of Aunt May to one of the what I would argue is a top five all time MCU villain in Michael Keaton's version of the Vulture. Virtually everything about this movie registered with me in a big, big way, and so it made it a cut above the rest, in my opinion.
Very good. And my selection for film of the year is Avengers Infinity War. I've kind of already been over my thoughts on this on our most recent podcasts, but I've seen it three times at this point, and I kept waiting for my opinion of it to drop because I felt like I overrated it when I first saw it. But I've realized that, you know, at least for now, who knows what's going to be the case a year from now, 2 years from now. But for now, my opinion of it hasn't dropped. It's perhaps my favorite of the MCU, and I love it. I think it was everything that I was looking for in this movie. I got, was completely satisfied in it. And for me, it caused in me, and maybe there's been a lot that I needed going into that movie because of my state going into it. And it really picked me up and lifted my spirits, which is weird to say about a movie that involves a lot of, I'll just say, destruction. But for me, it didn't get a lot better. So I will maintain that as my film of the year. Let's move to David Sunday. David, your selection for comic book film of the year.
Well, I also had to go with Infinity War, but for a lot of probably very different reasons than a lot of y'all. Like, I mean, I love the emotional stakes and all kinds of stuff in there. I just praised Robert Downey Jr. earlier. But for me, the excitement came upon seeing some of these characters interact for the first time and the comedy that was involved in a lot of that. That really put it above a lot of the other things for me. Because where I got all my laughs from a lot of the other movies, that one, I don't know, probably did it the best. So, and just in scope of things, I have to go with Infinity War.
Good. Ms. Capel, your selection, sir.
Well, Mr. Phillips, Mr. Sunday, it was nice knowing you. going into the show, I was hoping if nothing else, I would come away with hurt feelings, and that has been accomplished. So thank you for that. You know, kind of in spite of myself and to repudiate one of Nick's trollish comments earlier, I am going to give it to Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
Great. This was not the type of film I could see myself putting down as a favorite the year or the half year, or even necessarily liking, because it sort of slots in that same category as Iron Man 3, which I heartily dislike. I think I'm on record as saying, but I totally get where Nick's coming from, saying that it is a pretty bad Thor movie in a lot of ways, or it's not the kind of Thor movie that you ideally want to see. But again, it's one of those things where if you get lost in the moment, you really do. And it connected with me kind of from the jump and did not let go for the duration of that film. So I don't know. Maybe I just give it up for Taika Waititi more so than Shane Black on the aforementioned Iron Man 3, which I do think is, again, tonally similar. But I really can't help myself but love this movie. And I mean, I'll put it this way. I saw it twice in the theater, and I barely see a movie even once in the theater, you know? So maybe it was just right place, right time, or my expectations were just that low enough. I'm not really sure, but everything about this just really clicked for me, and I absolutely adored Thor Ragnarok.
Goldblum is pleased.
Oh, I hope so.
Mr. Sellers, your selection.
Well, it's not going to be any real surprise here. Infinity War. Yep. I was prepared for that, Tim. I still love you, brother. That's
Tim powers activate.
A form of someone who gives a shit. But in any case, my reasoning is much like has already been mentioned, but for a couple of like really key points in the movie, already mentioned Thor Wreck Shop and Robert Downey Jr. reminded all you fucks out there that Iron Man is the backbone of the MCU and that he is indeed a hero. So for everybody that forgot that during Civil War, you know you are Team Iron Man, still rocking, and RDJ went hand-to-hand with fucking Thanos. So, I mean, come on.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the firm of Hamner, Smith, and Wesson.
Hamner is my favorite of those three. Anyway, we have the envelope here, and, I'm afraid to even say this on virtue of getting ostracized by Tim Capel, but the award goes to Avengers Infinity War for best film of the year.
Seinfeld GIF.
And Tim has exited the building.
Well, we have little time to mourn because we have to move to our next category, which is a category all about comic book theater. You know, we pitched it earlier in the show, gentlemen, and we all participated in it along with our friends on Place to Be Nation, or Universe, or Galaxy. And we are here to talk about our favorite supporting performance in comic book theater. These were any of the performances of characters that were not the primary Watchmen characters, the Watchmen themselves, if you will. So we're going to go kind of quick on this one a little bit and talk about our selections here. I'm going to start with Tim Capel here. Tim, your pick for the supporting performance in comic book theater.
I most enjoyed Moloch as rendered by the manager, Todd Weber, otherwise known as Larry King. What else can you say about this? But Cola!
I'm going to piggyback on that, Tim, because that was my selection as well. Okay. The manager, Todd Weber, as Larry King, as Moloch. And what else can you say? But I've got my Brooklyn Dodgers hat, and I'm going to move on to Russell for his selection.
I got to give it to Aaron George.
Mm-hmm.
If this guy doesn't leave you just gasping for air, like struggling to breathe with the Stu Hart impression, there's maybe you don't have a sense of humor, because this, it is killer. Just fucking insane. And if you've ever had to do a scene with him while he's in that mode, it's even better. So try desperately and you're still gonna fail. You can't help it. It's that damn good. He deserves every bit of accolade that he gets.
David Sunday, your selection, sir.
I had to go with Andrew Chandler Fraser Garner as Dr. Skip Long.
Yes.
I found myself laughing so much during every one of his scenes, and there were so many great characters out there. I know I had to give Larry King Moloch as my number two, but I don't know. Hearing Skip Carey voice analyze J.R. Shack was something I needed. I wasn't listening during most of those recording sessions, and when it actually came out, it was the standout of the supporting.
Well, all I can say to that, David, is that when this show's over, I can't even go to bed because I haven't even masturbated. So, let's move on to who's left. Oh, yeah, me. I went with Larry King. I already mentioned that. So now, Nick, your selection.
Yeah, I had to go with old Stu as Hollis Mason. Like Russell said, there is listening to it, and there is being on the other side of the call from, and those things are completely different and give you a new appreciation for what people who do this for a living actually put up with. Because, good Lord, that man, oh, yeah.
Show us some discipline and give us the winner.
Well, this was a razor thin vote, but here to accept the award in pre-recorded comments, we're actually going to throw to these right now. Here is Larry King himself to accept the Haffy Award for best supporting performance in comic book theater. Larry King, take it away.
Testing, checking. Is this on? Dip, dip, dip. Kala, you're on. Oh, my producer's giving me the green light. I get to speak. Thank you, hard-traveling fanboys, for this award. It's a very prestigious thing, this Haffy. Of course, it's the first Haffy I've received without pharmaceutical help in many years. Thank you. I will polish it, and then I will polish the award. I can't believe I beat Stu Hart, but that old fart's dead, and I'm still alive with my spindly legs and my suspenders and my oversized glasses. So thank you to Place to Be Nation Pop and the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and I look forward to participating in future installments of the Comic Book Theaters as soon as you write them and they resurrect my fantastic character, Moloch, the magician with the pointy ears. So thank you, and back to you, Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Excellent words from Larry King. I mean, I don't. Nobody can say it better than him, right, Nick?
Nobody. Nobody can say it better than Larry. So there
a
you have
an upset. I think I kind of thought that Aaron George had that bag.
It was by the thinnest of margins. I can tell you that.
Wow.
Well, with that being said, we are going to move over to the next category, which is the best feature performance in comic book theater. And I suppose I'll start us off with this one, as my vote goes to my colleague, my friend, my my amigo, compadre, partner in life and in all other things, Nicholas Duke, for his portrayal of Sex Ferguson portraying
I have no idea what you're talking about. I have nothing to add.
Daniel Dreeberg. I thought he gave an improved performance upon his work in the first comic book theater. He delivered even more laughs, even more improv. He had to engage in a long, luscious love scene with Jennifer Smith as
Try not to break as you giggled throughout the entire
thing. Yes, we recorded this in the room together.
Yes.
Well, Sex Ferguson recorded this in the room with me while Nick was taking a shit or something. It was quite a feat for me to get through this without suffering a heart attack from laughing and trying to hold it in as best I could. So Mr. Ferguson is my selection. Mr. Duke, your selection.
Well, not to you know, exchange favors for one another, because we've never done that before. But I have to send it back your way, sir. Rorschach's journal alone worth the price of admission here. So I got to go with good old J.R. Shack.
All right, Mr. Sellers, your turn, sir.
I got a feeling this is going to wind up being a clean sweep. Good old J.R. Shack wins this one for me pretty handily. The timing of all, the ability to keep a scene going, even though he's got to be close to breaking. I mean, there's just no way that he's not popping himself repeatedly. But at the same time, it's a good thing I have a working mute button, because I wouldn't have been able to get through some of this stuff. Trying to do a scene with this guy is almost like trying to do a scene with Aaron George. I'm going to break. It's really just – it's too damn funny not to – and it's a hell of a good lead performance, especially in this new version, this new volume, when you get to young J.R. Shack, I defy you to hold your shit together.
Well, I appreciate the words, sir. And I will say this. I am extremely thankful to the makers of Skype for inventing the mute button, because that allowed me to get through the majority of this entire project, regardless of who was talking. I can't remember a scene that wasn't either outright laughing out loud or on the verge of it. So, Tim, your selection, sir.
Yeah, I'm kind of towing the line here. It is J.R. Shack by a country mile. Just to show the folks how the sausage is made, just a little bit. It is astonishing to me that J.R. Shack was able to get through some of those monologues in one take. I just cannot believe it. Even with the level of improvisation that was on display in those scenes, what a tour de force performance. This ought to be a runaway. I don't know what I can add to what our other panelists have said.
Also, I once again would like to apologize to Barry Windham and his anal cavity.
Yes.
That was That was unnecessary on my part. But nonetheless, thank you, sir. And Mr. Sunday.
I'm going to make it a clean sweep. It's going to be J.R. Shack.
J.R. Shack. So, Nick, let's go envelopes here.
Ah, yes, the envelope. And here to accept the award for best lead comic book performance, I believe it's, my God, it's Jim Ross himself.
Actually, it's young J.R. Mother sent me here to accept the award. Thank you all for coming out here. And Mr. Watts says he's going to make me a big star. And I'd like to thank everyone here. And furthermore, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Young JR's BBQ.
All right, Nick, what the hell was that all about?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Young JR next time you talk to him.
All right. Get that kid out of here. So, would that be almost done? Oh, wait. One more category.
Ah, yes, there is one more surprise category. Here is the final envelope from the accounting firm of Con, Brody, and Hansen. And this, of course, is a return category, Mr. Greg, you may recall, for the best weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of PlayStation Nation Pop. A lot of suspense here.
Ooh, wait a minute.
This is remarkable. Greg, you and I have won the award once again for weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of PlayStation Nation Pop. I mean,
Jeez. Nick, I don't know what to say.
I don't either. I'm speechless. Literally speechless.
Folks, we're desperately out of time. I don't know what else to say, but thank you so much for all the voters who voted us in as the longest-running weekly episodic comic book podcast
in all of PlayStation Nation. Just do me a favor and keep that envelope and the piece of paper inside away from Sex Ferguson backstage. He will use it for very illicit purposes that involve Barry Windham and his rectum, and I just don't think we need any of that this evening.
We don't need any of that. Mm-hmm. Well, before we sign off, folks, I want to thank our panelists and our judges for joining us here tonight. Want to give them a chance to let us know where we can contact them on social media and what they have cooking down the pipeline. For you, Tim, how can folks get in touch with you?
Okay, well, they can get in touch with me on the Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8, again on Twitter. Other shows you can find me on Place to Be Nation. Pop! We have the aforementioned Talking Pop, which
the
won
the Haffy Award winning,
the now
yes Haffy that award has to winning. That has to be part of your tagline now.
It is going forward. So thank you, gentlemen and gentlemen, for that hand release for the best new Place to Be Nation Pop podcast, Talking Pop, myself and the award winning Jennifer Smith. Another show, but I think I will leave that to someone else to promote. On Place to Be Nation Wrestling, you can also find me on WCW Survey Says with myself and Andy Helene. It is basically and occasionally Greg Phillips as well. It is what it sounds like. It's all a bunch of shit out WCW. So a monthly show you can find on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. Who's next?
I believe, Russell, you're next.
Oh, I was so unprepared. No, you guys can find me at Russell_Sellers on the Twitter machine, and you can bitch at me or do whatever it is you want to do there. And you can find me on my now currently monthly podcast, Six Points, as has been mentioned a couple times here. Got a new episode coming down the pipe pretty soon. Mr. David Sunday is going to be joining me on that one. Talk a little shop about some Image. We're going to also be joined by James Eccles, who hasn't made an appearance on the show in some time, or maybe even before. This could be his debut, I think. But we're going to be talking about that. And of course, there's a
new show out there. You guys may have heard of it. Pretty popular. Yeah. It's getting a lot of buzz. And so it's kind of marvelous.
Fair, decent.
Fair, yeah. So it's not too shabby. It's pretty good. Sales is going to be talking to you guys about that in just a minute.
Russell punts as well.
Man. David Sundy, aforementioned David Sundy. In addition to getting on Seller's Points, how can folks contact you and what do you have planned down the line?
Man, this is Captain Metropolis speaking for David Sundy.
No, that would be horrible. Y'all wouldn't understand me. So I'm going to go with, obviously, David Sunday. You can find me on Facebook, or you can find me at Sunday
Easy PTB. Like David Sunday.
Oh, don't do that on Twitter. You wouldn't find me. So Sunday Group PTB. But yes, you can call it Easy Like David Sunday, like Nick will do.
Mm-hmm.
You can recently, I had Tim Capel for 2 months in a row, discuss Jimmy Eat World and then Our Lady Peace most recently. But I'm super excited to be recording, hopefully this next weekend, with Mr. Phillips to talk about Alter Bridge. I know that's I know that's no surprise I'm going to talk about them. It's actually shocking to me that I waited 10 episodes to finally give a whole episode for Alter Bridge. But that's coming up probably in a couple weeks, probably come out. So, yeah, please reach out and listen to my show.
Looking forward to that. Looking forward to that, as always. And that brings me to us. We are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Mentioned this earlier, at gphillips8652 on Twitter, at nickduke87. We also have email addresses, believe it or not. GregP@placetobenation.com, NickD@placetobenation.com. Folks, the loneliest email address on the internet. And also, PlayStation Comics Facebook. We haven't really promoted that a lot on this episode, but... please join the PlayStation Comics Facebook page. We've actually had a lot of good discussion going on there recently. A lot of people contributing, a lot of new fans coming on board, new comic book readers coming on board. Check us out there. Nick, I believe there's something that we've already promoted multiple times, but perhaps we should promote again.
Yeah, so the first episode of the Marvel Age podcast is out there now. And if you're not familiar with what this is, from a conceptual level, basically the idea is that myself, Russell Sellers, Tim Capel, and Todd Weber are going to take you through, year by year, the entire publishing history of Marvel Comics. We're not obviously going to hit every single book that's ever been published, but we're going to try to give you a snapshot of each year and give you a look at what was the most important books that were published to the overall Marvel Universe. So the first episode covering November of 1961 through the end of 1962 is out there right now. And here in the coming week, I believe, we are going to be recording episode 2 to cover 1963. And on that show... I will go ahead and say this is the teaser. This is the micro teaser for the trailer, so to speak. The announcement.
Anything like a micro penis?
Yes, and I would know all about. I would know all about that. So, on the next episode of Marvel Age, we have a pretty big announcement regarding the expansion of the brand. Honestly, as a result of the overwhelming amount of feedback and response that we've seen from the first episode, the overly kind words that everybody said, just the traffic to the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page, we have actually reached an understanding with one of our good friends, and we are going to be adding a second show under the Marvel Age banner on Place to Be Nation Pop. Details on that will be announced on the second episode of Marvel Age, coming to you in the near future. And that deal was actually just kind of finalized today.
With all that being said, we also may be having a couple new podcasts on Place to Nation Pop. What we are talking about doing, we haven't confirmed, with regards to a certain Austrian action star. We will talk about that off air. But the other one that I want to announce right now is, and anyone can join me on this, I am planning on going through a new podcast series. Actually, it's more going to be Pod Blast, probably in that 30 to 45 minute range, where we just look at internet clips of Rip Taylor. Oh. So anyone who wants to join me for this is welcome too. And with that being said, we are coming to an end of another successful Haffy Awards. Thanks to all the panelists, all the judges. And most especially to you, the listeners, for joining us for this award season. We hope that you enjoyed your watch parties around the country and indeed the world. And we hope that you send us your list and let us know what we got wrong, what we got right, and how we can do things better. With that being said, folks, take care of one another. We'll see you next week on the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
That is the reason he's my friend. Happies, that's what he says to me. Happies, half for you, half for me. Happies, give me some. If I don't share, I am a bomb. If I don't share, I am a bomb. If I don't share, I am a bomb.